Thank you all very much for coming, and it's an honor to speak here. Thank you for all the people who are listed here, and it's a real honor and has been a great pleasure to work with this group. Okay, so this is what I'm gonna. I'm actually gonna stand right here, maybe that's better. This is the. Paper that I produced. It hasn't been published yet, but it has been reviewed and it will be published. This is the key piece of evidence that kind of launches us into this discussion. Okay, you'd think that if you're going to do all of that, the first thing that you need to do is demonstrate to us that that it's actually necessary, that there's a problem that this is actually going to solve. Well, Alan Page, my tutor for all things utilities, has told me with a straight face, he reported the fact. He said, it has been assumed. Well, there are all kinds of conjectural assumptions to be made, but one really needs to demonstrate whether or not this is so, okay? So, need. Whether or not there is, in fact, a need, whether or not this assumption is actually correct, is the focus of today. And let me just tell you, so that you're not at the edge of your seat for the whole time. Okay, this is the conclusion. The conclusion is that there really is no need. Okay? Now, this is a statistical statement, so I'm going to explain to you in a little bit what it means to say something like that statistically. Okay? All right. So let's start by looking to, this is per capita consumption of power in New York State. This is year from the early 90s to now. Okay? And this is shown here in megawatts hour per person per month, okay? And what you see is that this is the first line of evidence to suggest that something is going on here, is that while it has been rising at a pretty nice clip until the early 2000s, it's been pretty much diving ever since then, just like Will has said, okay? So that is kind of is calling into question the assertion that need is there, and it may even say, well, is there really no reason to worry? Well, not exactly. Okay, so now I'm going to tell you the three reasons why it is not altogether unreasonable to subscribe to the notion that some addition is needed. Okay. First of all, like Will said, the peak load is the issue, and it is not the mean load. The system typically works around 55 to 60% of its capacity, and it's only those really unpleasant afternoons in typically in July, but sometimes in very early August, that the load peaks, and that's what we're trying to address here. Okay, so if you were the PSC, you would say yes, that is correct, and no, it is not relevant. Okay, because just to tell you, because this is the monthly mean, whereas what we're interested in is the peak load. Okay, and the peak load sure is responding to climate change, and this is a projection of what climate change, one of the many ways to estimate climate change. Okay, and this shows you the deviation of the maximum temperature, excuse me, averaged over 2040 to 2059 from the average over 61 to 90. Okay, so you can think about it as the degree of warming relative to your, basically, to your experience. And here is our neck of the woods, and by looking at that color and appeal to this legend, we see that it's somewhere in the vicinity of 2.5 or so degrees Kelvin, or about 4.5 degrees Fahrenheit. Okay, so we're worried about peak load. Peak load is, among other things, a function of how warm it is, and it is getting warmer, okay? In addition, the population of the downstate region, okay, has been steadily rising. I'm gonna use the term quite often, downstate region, by which I mean all five boroughs of New York, as well as both counties in Long Island, in Rockland and Westchester, that region, okay? And the last full census that we had was 2010, and at that time, that region comprised something like 12.3 million, but you see that it has been rising at a nice clip since the early 1980s. So this is just an observed fact. You can pluck it off of the US Census website, or you can substantiate it any number of ways. There's really no question about that. This is quite less certain, so that is why I chose a kind of a distinguishing visual representation of it. This is based, however, on among the most trusted and reliable estimates of what's going on with New York State population, and that is from the Cornell Program on Applied Demographics. Okay, so you see right here that whereas there has been a very rapid rise in the recent past, it is projected to gradually slow down, and then in the toward the end of my the time horizon I chose to focus on, which is 2040, it basically plateaus and doesn't increase anymore. I want to emphasize one more thing here, and that is that typically the utilities, NYISO, and so forth, people who are involved in projection of peak load into the future, they tend to operate on a 10-year prediction horizon. Here we're talking about significantly more than that, more than threefold more than that, okay? And much of the population change occurs very near the metropolitan area, where the population density and the overall population are both increasing. Okay, my first challenge was, this is what I call NYISO, what everybody calls NYISO, but this is New York Independent System Operator. This is basically the people who keep the records of all manners of power and energy consumption in New York State, okay? So this data, insofar that I use NYISO data, it's not contestable, okay? This is something that we can all agree on is our best estimate of whatever we are trying to estimate using those data, okay? And what is shown here, this is downstate peak load in gigawatts, okay? So every year has an observed 1 hour period during which the system maxed out in load, okay? And that's shown right here in gigawatts, and that's time again from 93 to the recent, the most recent data point is 2013, okay? My first challenge, there is no such thing as actual estimate, NYISO or anybody else produces, of the peak load in the downstate area, okay? This is the region that we're talking about, actually including all of the island all the way to Monto. But this area is not typically addressed as a monolith by the NYISO, and therefore I needed to, before I went into the major model, I needed to create a model of peak load for that. How it's done, you can very well read in the very technical report, if you so wish, or in the sort of report light, you can call it. I think it's 5 or 8 pages. The full report is order 30 or so, okay? And the different ways I estimated it are summarized. Well, one way is the continuous curve. That's the one I believe most strongly. And then there were other estimates shown by the open circles. Basically, what you see is that after tweaking with the knobs of the model various ways, I was able to produce a series of mutually consistent estimates of peak load. So basically, this is the peak load, and it really doesn't matter if you're looking at this estimate or the other, it's basically the same thing. And it is also clear to the eye that if you are trying to fit a straight line through that, that line is sloping upward, meaning that peak loads are rising. Reason for concern, okay? So that is essentially, if you want to think about it, it is a combination of the fact that, that the population is rising, and also that it has been getting warmer, not anything like this, okay, this is for a relatively distant future, but even the comparison of the average, let's say, since 2010, relative to 1960, is going to be plenty red, okay? So those two together give rise to that, and that is perfectly consistent with the need for the plan, and we therefore need not willy-nilly just reject the notion that this is needed. But I'm here to tell you quite the opposite, right? So I just wanted to show you that this is not some kind of a knee-jerk reaction, but rather a careful calculation, okay? So what is done here is breaking down this line estimates the slope, the rate at which the peak loads have been rising in the downstate area, over the entire period from 93 to 2013. But what if you try to break it down into the relatively early part and the latter part, okay? These whiskers right here are the uncertainty intervals, okay? So the elusive and unknown reality falls somewhere between this and this, and we know that with one shot out of 100 of being wrong. 99% confidence, okay? So what this is saying, that yes, indeed, the early part of the record, right here, is rising. What about the latter part of the record? No. If you are, if you insist on having a one shot out of 100 chance of being wrong in your estimate of the rate at which peak loads are rising, you would say, since 2006, it has been holding steady and not going anywhere, okay? And you see the range is very, very broad with zero more or less in the middle. In technical speak, you would say we are forced to reject the idea or the notion that the peak loads are rising, okay? So now I presented to you a number of pieces of evidence showing why we need to worry, and then I also immediately after that showed you that perhaps we don't need to. What I mean is the population is rising, it is getting hot, sure enough, combining those two, there is a steady increase in peak loads. But here, you see, it seems like the peak load rise has kind of run its course, and that's it. It rises no more, okay? So which is it? That's the issue, okay? So we need to carefully choose between one or the other. Well, you know, they're mutually antithetical. So which is it, okay? So the approach, basically, is the canonical approach of statistical modeling, which basically says, analyze the reasons for recent years' rise, okay, and recent rise in downstate peak loads, and derive from those predictors. Okay, so for example, just to give you an idea of what a predictor might be, suppose you were in the business of trying to estimate shoe size, okay? You would careful after canvassing randomly a number of people, you would notice that there is some relationship between how tall a person stands and his or her shoe size, starting with Lila's relatively modest size, okay? So then, the height will be a reasonably good predictor of the shoe size if that shoe size is the variable you're trying to estimate. Okay? So so then, once you derive predictors, there are good ones and there are bad ones, okay? And there are rigorous ways of differentiating between those two, okay? And then, once you did all of that and you singled out only the really good ones, and you're using only those, you can make predictions about the future and immediately, without even pausing, directly proceed to testing the validity of your projections, okay? So that is this is what the remaining good predictors are, okay? One of them is downstate population, and that makes sense. I mean, the more people there are, the more light switches go on, the more ACs go on when it's on, and so forth. So we can see here, this is, in all three panels, this is the historic downstate peak load, okay? And this, over here, is the value of the predictor. For example, in this case, it's a piece of T, that's the total population in millions, and the colors implicitly show you the progression of time. So dark blue is 93, dark red is 2013, and you can see the progression, okay? So again, just to help you out here, This is the total population, and you see that reds are concentrated here. Reds are concentrated where it's high, so that means that the peak loads in recent years have been higher than the peak loads in earlier times. Okay, the other predictor is annual maximum temperature. Again, that makes sense because those peak loads are realized at maximum heat in the afternoon, in July, and so forth. Alleviating heat stress is a key issue. And here you see the value of the annual maximum temperature, the maximum temperature that was realized during the time of peak loads. And what you see is, yes, there is a relationship. It's kind of bluish here and it's kind of reddish here, but that is the least robust of all the predictors. It turns out that it is statistically significant, but just barely making it, which is very good. You might think that this is, this doesn't sound very good. He's just telling us it's barely passing muster. No, that's the point. The point is that despite the fact that this is expected to befall us, because peak load is only weakly related to the maximum temperature, this will have a modest impact on rising peak loads. Okay? So that's what this one's saying. And the final one is the trickiest one, I think, to understand, and that is the ratio within the population. However large the population is, that's already taken care of here, okay? But what is shown here is the ratio within the population of people in reasonably young age group, 20 to 45, to those in the 45 to 70 age group. And the reason for that choice of addressing this ratio is that there is a voluminous body of literature that tells you that people at different ages use electricity differently, and in particular, exert different control over the peak load, okay? And this is a very strong and robust predictor. Early on, the value, the ratio is something like 1.6, 1.7, which means that there was about 60% more people in this age group relative to the people in this age group. Okay? As the population ages, we proceed a long time here, and peak loads are rising, but the ratio is steadily dropping. That is a key reason why historically peak loads have been rising. Okay, now we will get back to that in a minute. I just want to show you this over here is a very rigorous estimate, which I'm not going to belabor the point. If you want to be absolutely sure that I'm telling you the truth, which I encourage you to do, you should go and read the report and good luck. So this is finally, okay, or maybe, yeah, that's good enough. Okay, so this is the final peak load forecast using that model. And again, I swept under the oratorial rug a whole lot of, you know, weeks and weeks of work, which is not uncommon for this line of business, but it's just to show you that this doesn't just pop out of the computer just like that. It requires a lot of finessing. However, once I finessed it, okay, and that was basically around week three or so, and the model was very strong and performing very well, and I could hit it with a progressively heavier hammer, and it would still not confess to anything, okay? Once I did that and I hit it with the heaviest hammer I have, and truly the gold standard of hammers with which to hit statistical models, this is the error in my prediction. The height of those whiskers right here, the vertical whiskers, the height of those show you how off from reality I expect to be. And I am, actually. This is literally an honest test of how skillful the model is. So that is what is shown here, the forecast skill, okay? So this is, again, downstate peak load, either observed in red or predicted over here. We'll get to that momentarily, okay? For the observed past, that's what we have. And the point of these whiskers is that the model is performing extremely well. And I said it once, I'll say it again. I've been in this business for many years now, a few decades, and I wrote tens of papers using machinery not dissimilar to this. And it is very rare, not entirely unheard of, but very rare that one gets, after 3 weeks of work, that kind of forecasting skill. That is really a very tough bar to cross, and this model crosses it very, very nicely. Okay, now to the question at hand. The question at hand is not the past. The question at hand is the future. Okay, so this is shown the best estimate of peak load in the downstate region in the future is given by the blue curve, okay? Which is smooth because it's the average of many 200, actually, 200 estimates. Each one of them you can think of as some kind of a putative reality of what the future between now and 2040 will be, okay? And the shading of gray right here shows you the likelihood that the actual peak load will fall in that range. So for example, the highest likelihood is just hugging the best estimate. That stands to reason. These two right here, this and this, the lightest of gray, those represent the possibility of being wrong one shot out of 100. One shot out of 100, and this is, of course, we're not interested in the minimum of the prediction, because we already know that we can meet handily. The question is the maximum, okay? And the maximum right here, the 98th percentile right here, basically limits, sets an upper bound on what can be reasonably expected peak loads in the future to be. Only two out of those 200 were somewhere in this vicinity, and really, in most experiments, none was any higher than that. Now, finally, the assets. You know, if we have peak load, we have assets with which we're trying to meet those peak loads. It's very helpful to think about this as your expected expenditures and this as your salary. As long as your salary is higher than your expected expenditures, you are in the black and you're doing well, okay? Possibly even saving, okay? So these are the assets, and they're based on making a very conservative assumption, and that is, NIASO keeps a queue line of various utilities that wish to enter this market, and they kind of are on the hook for various logistical expenses. So they are not doing it willy-nilly, they're doing it after a great deal of thought. And we are here estimating that only half of those will be realized at the year. So this, the difference between this and this, for example, is that one asset is being added between 2015 and 2016, and that is only half of what is expected to be completed during this period. So you see that really, once you get, this is 14, 15, 16. Once you get to 16, the assets just shoot way up, and the problem is debt. Debt, there is no way in hell that this is going to be exceeded, that these assets will be exceeded by actual peak load. However, what about this? Over here, I make the assumption that come Christmas Day 2015, Indian Point is cold. No more. 2 gigawatts gone. Okay? Is there a problem? No. There is not. The assets are well clear of the most conservative estimate of the peak loads. Okay? So the upshot of this graph, even if you haven't followed it, the details and such, supply always exceeds the highest peak loads, okay, which means there's no need. Now, in a recent radio interview, a guy asked me, are you 100% sure? I said, this is a statistical question. If anybody tells you, based on statistics, that they are 100% sure, they're either not serious or they're lying. It has to be one or the other. No, I'm not 100% sure, but I am very close to 100% sure. Maybe 1-2% chance that this will be exceeded. And then we must invoke the principle that we'll put on the table, and that is, what will happen if really that totally highly unlikely event would happen, and let's say this will slightly exceed that. All that it means is that there will be a few hours in which there would be rolling brownouts. And that is, again, to emphasize, in the most unlikely of outcomes possible, something that, you know, you can ask yourself this, there's a concern now about Ebola, okay? If you don't like this kind of risk, surely every hospital in the state is going to now swiftly build a 100-bed Ebola isolation unit because you don't like risk. There is a risk. It's extremely small, but it is not vanishingly small, okay? This is just up that alley. It is an exceedingly low risk. And now you ask yourself, okay, it's extremely improbable that there will be any problem whatsoever. Even in the extremely unlikely event that there will be a problem, what will be the problem? A few hours of brownouts. That's it. For that, you take a whole huge area of world-class scenery and economy and so forth and deface it for generations. It doesn't make any sense. Okay? Now, as Will already indicated, this is even after all of that. I thought, geez, I mean, what can be wrong? right? So when I got those results, I said, is this totally unlikely? And next thing I know, I see that the people in charge of these proceedings have already themselves said that there is no good, so they're interested only in a narrower horizon. And they say, no, there's no issue. They themselves say that there is no issue. It is really making as much sense as trying to walk rightward with one half of your body and leftward with your other. You will get nowhere, and that's the kind of logic that can guide a state on the one hand to reach this conclusion, and on the other to set in motion these proceedings in which the exact opposite is addressed. It is making no sense at all. Now, if you want to understand why is it that those predictions are as modest as they are, there are three reasons. One, I already emphasized to you that whereas the rise in population rise, so this again is, I showed you this already, this is the total downstate population in millions, and this is year. The recent history has been one of fairly rapid rise. The future is a much slower rise coming to an end toward the end of the period, okay? So the recent history is not going to repeat itself or anywhere near that in between now and 2040. The next, so actually let's go to the third, that's easier. I already emphasized that. While climate change is significant, you saw it, right? And it is, there's every reason to be concerned about this. But be compounded with the very weak sensitivity of downstate peak loads to temperature, the impact is very, very modest, and that's shown just in words right here. The rationale for that is fairly straightforward. When it is 90 degrees, if you have an AC, you're gonna crank it. And then does it really matter if it's 98? No. Your AC is already running, and that's, you may be a little less comfortable if it's 98, but your AC is going to be contributing to that downstate peak load. Okay? And the third reason is here, that's the trickiest one to fathom, I think, and that is here is the ratio of people 20 to 45 years of age and to those falling in the 45 to 70 age range, okay? And that, I already showed you that ratio was something like almost 1.7. So in other words, there were 70% more people in this age group as opposed to this at the beginning of the period. Here, it's been taking a nosedive, and by the time we got to the last census, it has already dropped to 1.2. But take a look at this. We are right now at an inflection point of this ratio. From this point forward, it's certainly not going to decline, and if anything, it's going to very modestly rise, therefore reversing the trend positive contribution of this ratio to peak loads in the future. Okay, so the last point may have been a little elusive, it kind of flashed by pretty quickly. The point is, if you train the model based on the past, what happened in the past, and then you use predictions of what will happen in the future in terms of total population size as well as its composition, and the degree to which maximum temperatures will rise as global warming unfolds, the model responds with an incredibly weak increase in peak loads, and there they are. and they're not anywhere near the assets that we have and that rapidly increase despite the fact that right here Indian Point is no more. Okay, so to summarize this, is the proposed project necessary? It really is not. And are you 100% sure, Gidon? No, I'm not 100% sure. I'm also not 100% sure that a meteorite will not strike Bar. Okay? That's the key issue. Now, the remaining of the talk is about a few attributes of this plan and kind of examining those a little more carefully. One thing that PSC has been promoting it as is green. You're building a viaduct through which you will bring to the downstate area wind energy. Well, really. Okay, so this is where the wind energy is in New York State. It is basically in coastal waters, either around Long Island or in the Great Lakes. Okay, everything else in between is not even worth plotting on this scale of poor to superb. Okay, so where New York has and is planning wind farms is in this area. Okay. Broadly defined, okay, and that is simply where there is no wind to speak of, at least not at a level that is enough to propel the wind turbines. Okay, now let's look at it this way. This, okay, so this right here is very nice and may power a few small population centers, but New York State is really about the downstate, okay? New York City right here is 8.2 or so million people. The next largest city after New York City is Buffalo at 0.26 million, 260,000, okay? So all of these, yeah, you can power them with winds. I mean, this is basically almost irrelevant, you know. The action is New York City and the adjacent counties like Rockland, like Westchester, and so forth. Now, if that is so, take a look at this. This is perfectly conflated geographically with where the winds are in New York State. Now, this is hardly a novelty. This is a paper from Nature just a few weeks ago, really, okay, which calculates the rate of momentum dissipation along the coastal waters of the US and how much of that is tappable to propel wind turbines, okay? And it concludes that the amount of energy available, tappable by wind along the coastal waters of the US is three times the current overall national energy needs. Three times the amount we use overall. Okay, so we can obviate all coal burning power plants, and if you don't like nuclear, go right ahead. I mean, I'm not weighing in on that. Okay, so the point is that if you are serious about wind energy as your choice of source of energy for the future, you do not go to where there's piddly little wind, as in the upstate New York hills, but you go to where the wind is, and that is near the coastal waters of the nation, and this is the local manifestation of the findings that these guys delivered on a national scale, okay? So, it is not really about bringing wind to power New York City, and this is kind of shown right here. There's currently about 5.5 gigawatts of wind, mostly wind, but alternative overall, mostly wind projects in New York State, planned in New York State. Of those, only 1.1 are allowed to be counted as peak sources, the sources for meeting peak loads. Think about it, 1.1. Indian Point alone, which we have already extinguished, is twice that. So yes, there may be a little bit of wind energy coming downstate, but it is trivial. It's about 5-6% of peak load for that. That doesn't make sense, okay? So in addition, the second attribute of this plan, it is against our interests, okay? And here is why it is. Now, to be clear, we will, for the foreseeable future, need the grid, okay? I'm not thinking in terms of eliminating the grid. Its roles will change, but it will still be needed, okay? But that notwithstanding, we are now at the first time in history in which energy consumption and generation can be distributed and egalitarian, what we call local, okay? A lot of the ideas promoting agriculture in the Hudson Valley is about local. This is as local as you can get, okay? And this plan, which has a single major viaduct through which energy is coming from north to south, is very much stifling our ability to make a choice about where our energy is coming from. Okay, and you might think, what is more American in spirit than hundreds of mutually competing small businesses, and how does that compare in the American ethos to a handful of many billion-dollar corporations? Those are necessary as a societal good. I'm not writing them off. But the roles can be significantly demoted and redefined, and the plan is diametrically opposite to both redefining those goals and the roles and rethinking our relatedness to the utilities. Another thing that has been leveled against our objection to the plan is that it's NIMBY. It's not in our, not in my backyard, right? And that I reject very strongly on the following grounds. NIMBY is about recognizing the need, but refusing to shoulder the burden. And the best example, I've been in academia for a while now, and you think about a bunch of academics sitting in a faculty meeting, and the dean tells us, we need such and such new committee. All of a sudden, all of us are finding great interest in some piece of chipped paint somewhere in the confluence of the ceiling and the wall, because we just don't want to make any eye contact lest we will be fit. That's NIMBY, okay? We don't reject the notion that the committee is necessary, but let committee happen to somebody else, is what we say, okay? Here, it's not that at all. We simply reject the notion that there's any need. If a committee is not necessary, don't make it. This is the last point, and it's a tricky one, but it's very important. So bear with me just for a few more minutes, and we will get through that. There is something in this world called network effect. This is what economists call it. People in the physical sciences call it network amplification. It's basically the same idea. It's like this. If you knew that I'm the only guy who has a phone, would you buy a phone? Most likely not. Why would you, right? The point of buying a phone is that you can call anybody you want. So the more people have a phone, the more attractive owning a phone becomes. That's what network effect is, okay? And in networks, we distinguish in general between two very diametrically oppositely structured networks. One is the very egalitarian network, in which most of the nodes, so networks are nodes connected by something, okay? Those homogeneous networks are ones in which most nodes are connected to roughly the same number of other nodes. Then you have the heterogeneous networks, in which you have a few nodes, like this one, or this one, or this one, to which nearly all other nodes are connected, but the rest of the nodes are mostly connected only to one key node and no more. Okay? So this is kind of very egalitarian, this is very monarchic in nature. Okay? And basically, New York, or really any kind of utility-based power distribution looks very much like this, or even less connected than this. There are means of quantifying the connectivity in a network, and utility networks tend to be far less connected than even this. Okay, but the point is that we, throughout the history of power generation and delivery, we were stuck with this model. You know, you want reliable service, you need to be connected with wires to a reliable generation facility, end of story. You're not going to be connected to a million randomly operating small generation facility. So this was what we were stuck with. We are now in a position in which we can't quite get to this. That's not really in the cards. But we can get a far more connected network. And most importantly, you will have segment sub-networks that can island off in case of either a malicious attack or a failure, and can operate on their own, minimizing the number of people that are cut off from power. So this is not quite the way it is shown here, but we have the possibility for the first time in history to have power that is reasonably disconnected from a central monarch-like entity. Okay? And the reason it is very important that this plan is diametrically opposite and it stifles the transition into a highly connected network. The reason that is so important is that the homogeneous networks, like the one we stand to have if this plan does not happen, have a much higher resilience. Okay, so there's a lot of discussion about resilience in many circles, but rarely do you hear what is it that you mean by resilience. You know, well, exactly what it means, okay? This is very sharply defined here, okay? So what you see here, over here, is the fraction of the network that is malfunctioning, okay? So for example, imagine this being Google, let's say, this being you. Okay, if Google is out, down, pretty much 80% of your experience online is shot. Okay, so this basically quantifies the fraction of the network that is malfunctioning at any given time. This is a measure of the efficiency of flow, either information or electrons, in the network. This basically is the mean distance between that you have to reach to port to get your service. So you, for example, think about the surfing the web example. Suppose you could still, in principle, reach Google, but you would have to go through Cornell Extension in Poughkeepsie, and then going to Scenic Hudson servers, and then here, and here, and here. By the time you get to Google, you get a trickle of 2 kilobytes a second. Okay, so that is an almost dysfunctional, but not dead in the water system. Okay, so basically, the further up you are on this axis, the less resilient you are. Your network is okay. These are the sensitivity of the heterogeneous network to random failure. Okay, so this is the heterogeneous, the one that is like our current system with which we will be stuck if that program proposal comes to pass. Okay, so this is the heterogeneous sensitivity to failure. This is the homogeneous. So the homogeneous one, the one we stand to get if this proposal is stifled. It is here, but a little above it. But the point is that it is pretty much independent of how much of the network is down. Conversely, the heterogeneous network, if you carefully choose which node you take out, its resilience is rapidly declining with the number of nodes falling. Okay, so the upshot of this, even if you didn't follow that, and I appreciate this is hard, not everybody's doing network analysis for a living, but that's okay. The point is, remember again, the further up you are, the less resilient your network is. And this is how sensitive the heterogeneous networks are to attacks. They are very sensitive to attacks. They go rapidly higher, and higher is less resilient. Conversely, the system, the homogeneous alternative, which was, we now have the technological ability to have, but that this plan is directly in the way of, that is shown by this curve right here, and it does not increase rapidly into the rapid loss of resilience. Now, I gave this talk a few times already, and that was that, but in this industry magazine, which I've started following only after working on this for a little while, take a look at when that is. Just yesterday. Okay? And take a look at this. So the Homeland Security, so the federal government, is acutely aware of that which I just showed, maybe not on a theoretical level like I showed it, but on practical level. The plan that we have in place now in New York is antithetical to that. It is as though these concerns voiced by the Department of Homeland Security are brushed off as non-existent. That is irresponsible. Okay, so in summary, what's going on here? The proposed plan is unnecessary, emphatically unnecessary, emphatically but statistically, is anti-competitive. It infringes on your rights to make the choices that are the essence of liberty, okay? And it reduces resilience under attack. And there was something in this world called 9/11, after which infrastructure design can no longer follow the historical lines it did up until 2001. So thank you very much for your attention. I appreciate it.